From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. About 800 people live in the village of Sheffield, Illinois, in the northwest part of the state. The town was once home to four grocery stores, but these days, there's only one. It's a decline common to rural communities across Illinois and really across the country, which often makes it that much harder for residents in those communities to find fresh food. But Sheffield's Royal Supermart, which opened in 1940, is still going. The owner of the store wanted to retire, but no one in the family could continue running it, and when he put it on the market, he didn't get viable offers. But then the leader of a local nonprofit came to him with an idea. Raise money through the nonprofit to buy the store and keep it open, preserving a vital community resource. The plan worked, and last year the community raised $500,000 to save the Royal Supermart, and last autumn, new ownership took over. Joining us now are representatives of the store's past and future. John Winger ran the Royal Supermart for more than 35 years. John, welcome to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
And Elizabeth Pratt is president and co-founder of the nonprofit that took over the Royal Supermart. It's called Cornerstone Community Wellness. Elizabeth, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can join us as ever at 800-222-9455, especially if you have seen a local grocery store in your area, maybe in a rural area, struggling to survive. A lot of stores have shut down. What's that meant for your community? Or maybe you've seen an opportunity for a store to keep going. We've talked about some of them on the show in the past. 800-222-9455 is the number. All right, John, Royal Supermart had been in the family since 1940. You'd been running it since 1985. What changed over that time, especially as yours became the only game in town?
Well, we always tried to, you know, have a good grocery store for the community. We kind of prided ourselves on having a very good meat department and full-time butcher. And we always had to just try to do our best to have the correct products in the store for the customers.
What do you think made the other stores go out of business, whereas yours was able to continue operating?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that of the four stores, my father was probably the youngest owner to begin with at that point.
Okay.
And
simple math.
And then as the other people retired, their stores just weren't replaced or passed on to anybody else.
Elizabeth, I want to bring you in now. Where did the idea to have this nonprofit take over the grocery store come from? What did those conversations with John go like?
Well, we started kind of during the pandemic, reevaluating all of the social and physical health needs that became obvious, and we're a health resource nonprofit. I never anticipated owning a grocery store, but we came across some research in our strategic planning process about the impact of on all areas of health, really, when a grocery store goes away in a town our size specifically. It really impacts the rural towns because once people start shopping out of town, that negatively impacts other small businesses, and it's kind of a slow decline. I found that it was an anchor institution for the economy, but also for the physical health, obviously, with food, but a real social health aspect also. So we just kind of felt like our mission was going to be a lot more difficult to accomplish if the grocery store went away. So knowing that and knowing John and his desire to make sure the store stayed, I think I emailed him and said, I think it matters that the grocery store exists long term. Do you want to talk about it? And of course he did. So we had a lot of conversations. He kind of helped me work through a lot of things as we were doing the research to see if that would be feasible. And a little bit to my surprise, my board kept saying, I think this fits. So it worked out for both.
It came together,
Johnny,
yeah.
For our nonprofit kind of organically over time.
John, this is interesting to me. What is it like trying to sell? I understand you were trying to sell the Mart for a while before Elizabeth came along. You can't just put this on eBay or run a classified ad in the newspaper, I take it. How do you go about that, and what were you finding when you were trying to do that?
Well, basically, we went through a business broker out of Peoria, Illinois, and then they would try to set us up with potential customers who wanted to have their own business and so forth. And we had a few people who came through, but nobody, we just couldn't get it to a point where any serious offers were being presented. And a lot of times in this situation, we seem to have a lot of maybe new Americans who take these positions and buy the businesses and so forth. But it was kind of a difficult time with COVID and so forth. So it just seemed like people were just staying put and not taking, trying to find new businesses to go with at that point in time.
So what made you, I mean, were you excited about this opportunity, confused, suspicious?
Well, no, I was very excited. I was turning 69 years old, and it's time for me to move forward with some type of retirement. And I was thrilled with the fact that Elizabeth and her organization would be interested in seeing the business perpetuate and stay.
So, Elizabeth, talk about the community support aspect of this. I mentioned having to go out to the community, raising money to make this a reality. What was that like?
Well, I think John talking about his experience trying to sell it, I think that we've been here almost 9 years, our nonprofit, and a lot of the people involved have been here a very long time also. And I think that that's really essential, that people who are rooted in the community are the ones who are kind of overseeing really with what they, just kind of getting a pulse on what the community wants and needs. And through that, I think it was a little bit easier. It wasn't easy overall, but a little bit easier to make the pitch to raise money for the project. I will say that it just felt like the timing was right when we approached kind of the initial larger donors that we had anticipated. It seemed like they were just kind of ready for this question. And so that was, we knew we had enough of a base to kind of move forward with a public campaign and see if we could make that happen.
All right, let me remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. We're talking about the Royal Supermart in Sheffield in northwestern Illinois. Last year, a nonprofit took over what was the last remaining local market in the community of a few hundred people. We're discussing today what that means for the community, and we're talking about that with John Winger, the former owner of the Royal Supermart, and Elizabeth Pratt, who runs Cornerstone Community Wellness, the nonprofit that took over the market. 800-222-9455 is the number to join us today. You know, Elizabeth, we have talked about on this show a number of different approaches people in food deserts or threatened food deserts have taken to rectify their situation, co-ops, et cetera. What sort of challenges did you have to navigate to make this nonprofit structure a reality?
More than I had originally anticipated. So sometimes being blind to that's a good thing. We sought out, I visited other grocery stores. We sought out some folks at Western Illinois University who've done a lot of work with rural grocery to investigate the models that existed and kind of see what would be right for us. We consulted with an attorney to set up our new legal structure. So actually the store itself is a for-profit entity under the supervision of our nonprofit. A lot of different reasons why we did that, which I won't go into detail there, but there was a lot of thinking about how to structure it to make it the most sustainable we could long term. That was really what was kind of running through my mind with every decision, is how do we kind of overcome this situation where it's generational, knowing that people are a lot more mobile than they used to be. They go to college and they move away. And so what was going to kind of work with the trends in that over time?
Yeah. You know, John, I wonder what it's been like for you. The Washington Post came and did a story about this last year. So there's been a lot of attention for it. There was also a big renovation that happened. I saw there still looks like some of the vintage signage, but it's definitely a gleaming, sort of very modern looking business nowadays. I wonder what it's been like for you watching that transformation in this whole process.
Oh, it's been a great process, and I couldn't be happier with the outcome. The store is a brand new store on the inside, new signage on the outside. It's energy efficient. They've just done so many things. The registers are computerized. The store is just really a great model of what the future is bringing to the grocery business. So they've done a great job with it. I couldn't be happier.
You know, you mentioned, Elizabeth, something that you said you weren't going to go into detail. I don't know. I wonder if I can ask you to go into a little detail, which is the idea that I understand you're a nonprofit, but the store remains for profit. That means it's still part of the tax base. Can you talk about that decision and how that worked exactly, or why that was taken that way?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we knew, we know that the economy of a town impacts health. And so we knew we wanted to contribute not only to keeping jobs in the community, but also to that tax base. We also, in speaking with our attorney, we investigated other purely nonprofit grocery stores that exist. And many of those are in urban areas that are very, very under-resourced. So he just didn't feel like, our attorney didn't feel like this transition from a store that was currently running as a for-profit in this community, which isn't necessarily considered blighted, while under-resourced in some ways, not blighted, he didn't feel like being solely nonprofit was a good option for us. And I found it's kind of been the best of both worlds. I've been able to fundraise through the nonprofit. We are able to run our mission through the store, but we also can contribute to the town in that way and do some, you know, take advantage of the things in the for-profit world also. So social enterprise is usually the term I use for that. Basically, all of our profits still go back into our mission at the store. However, we pay income tax and property tax.
Yeah, interesting. All right, John, we've only got about a minute left. And the last question I want to ask you, something that Elizabeth said earlier, which is the idea of a grocery store as like a social hub. And I think maybe for people in bigger urban areas, they don't think of it that way. Can you just talk about the Mart being, the Royal Supermart being a social hub for the community?
Well, yeah, it was, of course, we were there for, our family was there for 82 years, and we knew most everyone in our surrounding area. But people would come into the store to do shopping, and before you know it, they'd run into a neighbor or somebody they haven't seen for a while, and so they'd strike up conversations. And this type of thing happened all the time, and it is kind of a hub on our main street, and I think it still is. It's just a great place to be.
All right. Well, John Winger is the former owner of the Royal Supermart in Sheffield. Elizabeth Pratt is the president and co-founder of Cornerstone Community Wellness, the nonprofit that now runs the Royal Supermart. A real success story, and hopefully something that other communities can learn from here in Illinois. John and Elizabeth, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we will recap Governor J.B. Pritzker's State of the State address, hear how Rockford Public Schools are helping new migrant students, look at the spring flood outlook for the Mississippi River. It's our Friday reporter roundtables. Plus, we're going to revisit a conversation and talk about planning a road trip exploring Illinois' connections to the Underground Railroad. It's all coming up tomorrow here on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.